This is CliffCentral.com.
We're joined by Valerie Scherer, who's the Executive Vice President for Creative Affairs at NBC Universal Domestic Television. She actually works in the building 30 Rock and makes decisions about all the TV shows that we get to watch. It must be an incredible business to be in at this stage because television is changing so much. But Valerie's got an incredible history in TV, which we'll go into in a moment or two. First of all, welcome to South Africa.
Thank you. This is my first time here. I'm delighted to be here. This is such a beautiful country.
And you did. You wisely chose to marry a South African.
Yes.
Which we approve of completely.
That's one of my better decisions.
It must be amazing to wake up in the morning, to drive into Manhattan, to arrive at 30 Rock, and to realize that this isn't a TV show. This is actually your real life.
I have to say it is kind of the iconic epitome of what I dreamed of as a young graduate of college wanting to get into the entertainment business, and I've had a very fortunate career most recently with NBC, and walking into 30 Rock does feel very special. I kind of emulate Tina Fey a little bit, you know.
So.
Yeah. She's done quite well for herself.
She's done okay.
Yeah, yes, but I'm better behind the scenes.
There are a lot of people behind the scenes in television who actually make the wheels turn. There are a lot of people who sit in offices in creative meetings, who come up with ideas, who meet the talent, who pitch stuff to boards. And a lot of that stuff we never get to see, and some of it may be brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And that must frustrate you a little bit.
Well, I think being behind the scenes, there's a lot of creative stuff that happens that never makes it to the screen. So that's really the frustrating part of it.
Yeah.
Part of my job is to develop new shows, but not all of them end up on air because it's such a complicated business in terms of developing a show that, A, the audience might want to see. We sell to television stations around the country. We have to make sure that we're cleared across the country in those stations and that advertisers are going to want to advertise.
Now, this is important. In South Africans, we don't really have the same system here. So in South Africa, we've got a couple of channels, the networks effectively, who put together programming and put it on air, but they own the distribution. In America, it's different. You have different station owners in different markets all over the country who actually buy your content.
True, but we also have networks, and NBC is a television network, and they own their distribution pipeline, so to speak. But it's also part of a vast television, individual stations. The stations will get the network programming. So they'll get the Today Show, for example, on NBC from 7 to 9 in the morning, and it'll go till about 11. Then at 11 o'clock, the individual station will buy their own programming, and that's the syndicated television. They may do local news. They may buy our program, Steve Harvey. And then in prime time, around local NBC Nightly News.
Right, which
with,
is
Lester
terrific
Holt.
Brand.
Right, up until prime time, that's network programming. So the stations do a combination of their own local news, they'll buy network programming, and then hopefully they'll buy shows that my division is producing. And so at NBC Domestic Television, I can really develop programming for NBC or the Fox stations or the CBS stations.
So you can actually produce content for other networks and they'll buy it from you,
even
though it's NBC stamped?
Yes. So our next project, for example, is a show hosted by the entertainer Harry Connick Jr., and
amazing.
It's going to be aimed at the daytime audience, and we produce it under the auspices of NBC Domestic Television, and Fox bought the show from us, so it's an NBC show that will air on Fox, and we're actually producing it out of the CBS studios. So it's funny
this wouldn't have happened 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
So no, it's a business where you're looking for the best things for your show, and for us at NBC, we went with Fox because they had the right time periods, and time periods are like real estate.
Right.
You want the best real estate for the type of show that you have. And NBC buys a lot of our shows. The stations do. We have a terrific business with us. They do Access Hollywood, the Steve Harvey show, and they've bought the Meredith Vieira show. But this particular show, they didn't have the right time period, and Fox did. And Fox is very excited about it because Harry Connick Jr. is
He was an American Idol judge, right?
Yes, he's a judge on American Idol, and he's on the Fox primetime network. And so it seemed like a nice dovetail. This is the last season of American Idol, and people who are fans of Harry Connick Jr. can now see him every day of the week starting in September 2016 on the new Harry show.
Well, let's talk about daytime TV for a moment, because daytime TV has also been an important part of what's been offered by the networks and special programming that has always had an enormous audience. It used to be that people like Oprah would have this incredible following. I mean, she's built a fortune on this, of women often who were stay-at-home moms maybe, perhaps women who didn't have to work for whatever reason, but they would be there. They'd be watching these shows day in and day out. They would be glued to it. It was the only thing that filled up daytime once. So it would have been easy to make money out of that programming in the past. Now it's a lot more fractured and different, and there's so many other things to offer.
100%. Well, I'm very lucky. I did get to work with Oprah the last few years of her talk show.
You were at Harpo.
I was at Harpo. I was head of creative development there, and I was really developing new shows like the Nate Berkus show and the Dr. Oz show and shows for her new cable channel, OWN, O-W-N.
Yes, right.
But the beautiful thing about the Oprah show is that it appealed to a great many viewers. So it was time shifted. People would watch it and on their DVRs. But it's also shift workers. The daytime audience is a very broad audience. It's mostly women, but it's also men. Mm-hmm. And it's college students who don't get rated. And everyone wanted to watch Oprah because her show was so fantastic. And she was so incredibly relevant and relatable and compelling. And she's been off the air, I think it's 4 or 5 years, I don't believe there'll ever be another Oprah because there's only one Oprah. So we're not trying to develop Oprah replacements. We're trying to create new television.
It would be almost fair to say that she was the most successful person in television.
I would say. And I think that what she's doing with her cable channel, you know, she went from broadcast television. Now she has this cable channel, and she has a whole channel to program, and that was very appealing to her. But we still, I think viewers, I'm a viewer first and a creative program executive second. We miss her show. It was something that you had to watch.
Did you work quite closely with her?
I did. I reported directly to Oprah, and she was as fantastic behind the scenes as she was in front of the camera.
I've read a number of interviews and biographical bits and pieces on her, and they say that she would sign every single check.
Oh, absolutely. She was very involved in the business. She's a very smart businesswoman. And she surrounded herself with a group of people who really supported her. And she's had a vast empire. And Harpo has gone away, but her business at OWN and other things that she's doing will continue. She invests in Broadway plays.
She still does those specials often with various celebrity interviews.
Yeah, she'll do it. They air on OWN now, and she can still have a great influence, but doing a daytime talk show, which is every day of the week for 200 days of the year for 25 years, is an exhausting, it's really hard work. Mm-hmm. And Oprah, I don't believe she missed a day. She showed up all of that time. So she was ready really to do something else, even though I think the audience really misses her.
I'm sure it took its toll on her, too, because she was very open about her life, her own experiences, the trials and difficulties. And, you know, she would burst into tears when something came up that hurt her emotionally or that touched a part of her. So this was a very honest person on television. I'm sure she was in real life, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been in meetings with her where you forget that it's Oprah. It's just another person sharing ups and downs in your life. Hopefully we all have more ups than downs. But she actually, you know, suffered quite a bit. And what I loved about her, and one of the things that she would say to her audience, but also to the people who worked for her, is don't, you know, we have every right to choose what our story is. And even though bad things may have happened in your past, that doesn't have to be your story. It could be part of your story. But what are you going to do from here? And it gives you a great sense of possibility and opportunity, even when you face challenges. And it's incredibly inspiring. And, you know, I found that it was very relevant for me, and even in my own life, through ups and downs that I've had. Create opportunities going forward and don't get stuck in the past. I think that was her message.
Yeah, and a very inspirational message at that. I think it's really interesting that you were so you were so instrumental, really, in helping Steve Harvey get his own show.
Well, it's interesting. When I was working for Oprah, she actually was having conversations with Steve Harvey about doing the show. It didn't work out. Ultimately, he went to NBC. It just so happened that at that point, I went to NBC. So it was kind of ironic that when Steve Harvey was launching his daytime show, I came in as the head of creative affairs and developed the show with him and launched. And that was 4 years ago. And it was one of the top launches in daytime in probably 15 years. And his show has been a tremendous success because Steve himself is such an entertaining guy. He's funny, he's witty, but he's taken his comedic background and he's really tried to help women find the best relationships. And he wrote these many books, Think Right. Like a Man, Act Like a Woman, and television, made movies out of those. And that became, he became this relationship expert in addition to being hilarious and fun to watch. So it's been a real joy watching that show kind of go from infancy into the success that it is. It just won Best Talk Show.
Yeah,
and
congratulations.
So he's doing great, and he's also very successful on a game show that we don't produce called Family
Feud. Is that called Miss Universe?
Family Feud.
Oh, that's not a game
that's
show.
That's another thing. You know, the interesting thing about the Miss Universe issue is that you know, Steve, as soon as the mistake happened and he realized it, he fessed up. And I remember Oprah always said, you know, you mess up, fess up. He made a mistake.
Right.
And, you know, people like to look for a reason. Why did it happen? And it was, you know, live television is frightening.
Oh,
you get
the
noise
of the crowd.
It's a very, so many things. So many things going on. So he, as soon as he realized he made a mistake, He said it was his fault, and he took a lot of flack for it. But what that did is it gave him an opportunity to have Miss Colombia and Miss Philippines on his show.
That was just a week or two ago,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. And they reunited for the first time.
The ratings must have been amazing.
It did very, very well, but instead of saying the ratings did well, I think people really wanted to see what Steve had to say. And if you haven't seen it, you should look for that episode. You can probably look on it online at steveharveytv.com.
There we go.
And he did an excellent job of apologizing, but also bringing together the women who were really impacted by this mistake. And I think he's done a great job at giving Miss Universe pageant tremendous publicity.
It's got a breath of fresh air for a change.
Right, and I think he'll be hosting it for several years going forward.
Sure, they must just print those cue cards right.
They'll have to get those right.
Val, what about the changes in television? Let's talk about this for a second. TV used to be this monster, this juggernaut that commanded the biggest share of advertising. We just had Super Bowl weekend, and that's always the biggest thing in television because
right.
The advertising costs millions and millions of dollars for 30 seconds.
And those 30 seconds are so entertaining. I think it's the only time people really like watching commercials.
Probably the only time
the
a lot of ad agencies put any effort into commercials.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. The business has changed tremendously. I think a couple of things are going on. One is, it used to be families had one television and you would watch families together would watch TV programs. Then you had multiple TV sets in your household. So your kids would watch MTV and your husband would watch ESPN and the women would watch soap operas or their favorite primetime series. But now you have all of these devices and people do not have to be linked to their television sets to get great content. And it's also immediate. So you have news programs and Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and all of these things are giving you content whenever you want it. So,
do you look at television as competing with those things, or do you look at television as being almost a – television could still be the leading medium, and the others are ancillary and they complement what you're doing?
Well, originally when I was into this business, that was the medium for me to express my views and my beliefs in through content.
Mm.
But now I think content can be anywhere. And so I think of what we do, we have a distribution method that is syndication, but I think it's also about building our digital presence and our social media and looking at it as multi-platform and getting the message out anywhere and everywhere and having them all feed together. I still think television broadcast is the single best way to reach a mass audience, as evidenced by the Super Bowl, you know, live television programming that you can't get anywhere else.
When there's a major news event, you can't compete with that. When there's
a
big sports event, you can't compete with that, and it's in real time. So nothing on the internet that's pre-recorded can compete.
And so as a programmer, we have to do a better job at making sure that our shows are shows that you must watch, because now the daytime viewer isn't just watching, you know, lots of choices of TV programs. They may be watching Scandal from last night's primetime that they DVR'd, or watching a cable show that they DVR'd.
While they're tweeting.
While they're tweeting. And we know, we do a lot of research specifically with women viewers, and we know that they're on their laptops, they're on their iPads, they have their smartphones, and they're almost their own TV programmers.
Mm.
So we have to do a better job at making our shows entertaining, must watch, and really relevant for their lives. And I think people are looking to be entertained. There's a lot of bad news out there, and so the daytime audience is looking to be entertained, and that's why shows like Ellen, which are on the NBC television stations and hugely successful.
Massive.
I think after Oprah left, Ellen kind of took that spot, and actually Ellen and Oprah had a great relationship, and I think Oprah sort of almost handed her, you know, the keys to the kingdom, so to speak.
Hmm.
She's done a great job, and what I look to do with shows like Steve Harvey and this new Harry Connick Jr. show that we're developing is to really find ways to inspire and entertain our audiences so that every day you get a breath of fresh air, of fun, of laughs, and of great information that just makes your day that much better.
What do you watch, though? I mean, do you get time to, because in all of this you have to be in meetings, making decisions, watching a whole lot of people's show reels maybe and watching a pilot TV series. Do you get time to watch other networks and what they're
up to? I do. I always say that I'm the luckiest person because I get paid to watch television. My brothers are both doctors, but my parents say she gets paid to watch television. So it's a great thing. I watch a lot of TV. I try to watch as much of our programs because I have to have a sense of what we're putting on the air, but I can't watch every show that we produce. But I love Ellen. I was a big Oprah viewer. I launched The View back in 95, and I still occasionally watch The View, although it's changed ever since Barbara Walters left the show.
Barbara Walters, an institution, right?
She's
fantastic. Let's just stop there and just talk about her for a second, because Barbara Walters is something else. I mean, she's in her 80s, and she's still
going, and she developed The View.
Some would say she's almost better than ever.
Yeah, she created The View. She was a big news icon at ABC News. And I was just smart enough to ask her if she had any ideas for daytime, even though she had never done anything for daytime. She did do morning shows in her past. And she came up with the idea. She said, you know, get women of different backgrounds together to talk about everything under the sun. And that's how The View came around. And so she was an owner of that show, along with ABC, and a profit participant, not just a host.
Mm.
And again, another phenomenal businesswoman like Oprah Winfrey.
You've dealt with a lot of powerful women.
Yeah, yeah. And so Barbara launched The View, was on it for, you know, 18, 19 years, and just went off The View. And now they're finding their way. And you have to evolve in television. Daytime shows, the most successful shows, have been on for 25 years. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The View's been on for 20 years. Steve Harvey's been on for 4 years. When you develop a show, you hope you get a hit because it could have a long-term business.
Can we go into something that I'm fascinated by, and that's late night TV?
Sure.
It's such an interesting thing, and again, for South Africans, it's maybe not as big a deal, because we might only see a little bit here and there. The late night TV shows are so competitive. At the moment, it used to be Leno and Letterman, and then there were a couple other hangers-on around the edges.
Right, right.
And they would command this important, powerful advertising space. Late night, it was whose show was the funniest, it was who had the best guest. And there was huge competition too, because Leno effectively stole the job from under Letterman, who'd taken over from Carson.
Right.
So there's this history in late night TV.
Yeah.
Who's winning late night TV at the moment?
Well, I have to say I'm biased because I did work for David Letterman, but I now work for NBC. So I think Jimmy Fallon has done an amazing job after Jay Leno left The Tonight Show. They brought The Tonight Show back to New York, where it had its roots, which was incredible. We didn't really have The Tonight Show there in many, many years. So bringing that show back to New York, and Jimmy Fallon is such an entertainer.
Well, he can sing,
he can do it all. And yeah. I really think he revitalized the format. But I think they're all doing a good job. So Letterman went off the air in May, and I left Letterman before they went off the air. But, you know, it was a build-up. You know, David Letterman is going off the air. Everyone wanted to watch those episodes, and it was incredible because, again, he'd been on the air for 25 or more years.
He was an institution.
And it used to be Carson was the guy, and they all worshipped Carson.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one like Johnny Carson, so they were all trying to find their own way. And David Letterman had a great spot in late night television and always will, and I don't think anybody can take that away from him. But it's a new generation. Jimmy Fallon, before he launched the Tonight Show, of course he was on the Late Night Show, which followed. Actually, that was the Letterman spot Letterman left NBC at that after the 12:30 a.m. show. But what he did was he launched a lot of material on the web. And so there was a lot of digital spots of Jimmy Fallon, and so I think a lot of people who normally wouldn't watch late night saw him on.
Well, now it's true to say that in television success terms, the number of hits you get on YouTube is almost more important than the number of people watching on television.
It absolutely drives your business, and when those clips go viral, it's a great thing for the show, but more importantly, I think it's a great thing for the business. So late night television has really established a kind of new frontier after you've had the success of Carson and Tonight Show with Jay Leno and David Letterman. You've got Jimmy Fallon, but Jimmy Kimmel is doing great. Mm-hmm. You have Stephen Colbert, who comes from Comedy Central and is so witty and so bright and so he's perfect for this time because it's the elections and he has such an incredible political savvy approach to comedy. It's just very entertaining.
As a TV professional and someone who decides what programs are on and what is not, how do you feel Trevor Noah is doing with The Daily Show? He's one of our South African,
yes.
We're proud of him.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm hearing a lot of people saying that he might not be hitting the sweet spots.
You know, I think it's very hard for Trevor Noah, and I have to say I am a fan of his, but I didn't know him well. I think I have kids in their 20s, and they were more familiar with Trevor and had seen his performances. I wasn't aware. So I think he had to find his audience. And after you take over for someone like Jon Stewart, and that show had such it was a huge sensation for a cable network to have that kind of hit show. And out of that Jon Stewart show, you had Stephen Colbert, The Colbert Report. And so I think Trevor has a little, you know, he has a little bit of time that he's got to figure out what his mark is. But if I were programming at Comedy Central, I would just give him some time because I think he has a lot of talent and he has a unique voice.
Just to go back to Letterman for a
yes.
second, is he as curmudgeonly and as difficult as he sometimes seems to be when he's interviewing people?
You know what? I think Dave.
A bit difficult.
It's not that he's difficult. he's just super smart, and I think he doesn't suffer fools easily. I loved working with him, but he's not the touchy-feely walk around the office and put his arm around your shoulder. He pretty much stayed to himself, but, you know, everybody wanted to please him and do a great job for him, and the company was incredibly successful. His show, he left NBC, CBS took the show, he owned his show. You know, Jimmy Fallon doesn't own his show, NBC owns his show. David Letterman took, you know, this opportunity after not getting Carson's spot and started Worldwide Pants, and Les Moonves picked up the show, and actually I think it was Howard Stringer who picked up the show, but CBS bought the show, and David formed this business, Worldwide Pants Incorporated, and out of that he had The Late Show with David Letterman, he had The Late Late Show first with Craig Kilborn, and then with Craig Ferguson. He developed Everybody Loves Raymond, which was a very successful sitcom, and he did movies and documentaries, and he had a massive business, and it was a very creative place to work. You had people who were the most creative, and every day we got to put on a show. So it was a real joy to work with him.
And now he's grown a big Taliban beard.
I haven't seen him
since.
And
he's living in Montana on his ranch. He's become a bit of a hermit, right?
I think that Dave always had a little bit of a reclusive kind of way about him. But, you know, I'm interested to see what he's going to do next. I don't think he's just going to ride off into the sunset in Montana. I think you'll probably see him doing something.
Could be something to watch. But a lot of these people who we get to know on television, or we think we get to know on TV, they sometimes in their actual daily course of life want to have as little to do with being in the public eye as possible. And they do become a bit reclusive. I mean, you know, you don't see Oprah around as much. You don't see David Letterman around as much. You certainly, when Carson retired, you didn't see him.
Yeah, because I think you give up a lot. You sacrifice a lot to be in people's living rooms every day or every night. And, you know, there is a little bit of privacy that you want to have, when you're off the clock, so to speak.
Did you ever have to get into arguments with these people and stand your ground and tell them, no, you can't do that or you can do this? Because I imagine in television there's so much going on that you will occasionally bump heads.
Well, I think as an executive, you always have to make smart business decisions. But I would never say I, you know, bumped heads with people. I tried to convince them of the right business decision. And I don't always win, you know, but occasionally you'll find yourself where you'll have a difference of opinion and you can just do your best. I think if you get down to a contract where you say who has the right to say yes or no, you're in dangerous ground.
That's where you call the lawyers in.
Yeah,
right?
I'd rather stay away from that. My style is to have a sense of trust and credibility so that when you're working with these great, great talents, that they really trust you, so that when you make a suggestion, it's not that network suit is telling me I have to do X, Y, or Z, but that they listen and they take your advice because it's a good business decision. And so far, I've been very, very lucky. I haven't had a lot of instances where I've really butted heads with any of my talent.
What's the dream show that you haven't got on air yet?
I'm launching it.
It's the Harry
Connick Jr. show. And I will tell you that Harry is someone that I've watched from afar as an executive. He's a singer. People don't know that he's as funny as can be. He's got a great sense of humor. He's been in plays, he's been in movies, he's been on TV shows, he's an actor, he's a judge. He comes from New Orleans. His father was the DA of New Orleans. His mother was a judge. He has this incredible background. He's married to the same woman for over 20 years, three daughters.
That never happens in Hollywood.
Family man. And when he walks into a room, he lights it up, and he's the hardest worker that I've met so far. So I'm really excited about this new show and getting it up on the air September 12th. Check your local listings.
We will. We'll make sure we get it here. Well, thank you, Val. Thank you for talking to us. Thank you for producing so many years of great TV, and please keep it up because we can't let Netflix and Hulu steal all the audiences.
Thank
especially
you,
when you guys know exactly what you're doing when it comes to great daytime and great nighttime TV.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.